Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is episode 22 of Nintendo World Report's Connectivity. We're starting off with a news roundtable this week. Then Neil, Danny B, and Don talk about Sakura Samurai Art of the Sword. Finally, we've got a discussion on used games with Zach, Scott, and Andy. As always, don't forget to send your thoughts to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com and help us out by reviewing the show on iTunes. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Connectivity. I was about to say newscast. Shit. Welcome to another edition of Connectivity. And we've got some really good news, as we've got the more or less the regular crew, minus our man in Japan, Danny Bivens. But we've got Scott Thompson.
Hello.
Zach Miller.
Meow.
Mike Sklenz.
Bonjour.
And Patrick Barnett.
Hello.
And we are pleased to announce that we're going to have a panel at PAX East.
Woo!
Yay!
On Friday, April 6th. Good Friday. A very good Friday indeed. Not only, if you believe in it, does Jesus die, but we're also going to have live connectivity jeopardy.
I think that's the better thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus died, connectivity live jeopardy. I don't know which is better. It's tough.
I heard there might be some kind of keynote going on at that time, but you should just skip it.
Probably. Yeah, literally as PAX opens, we will begin our panel.
You know, it's just going to be okay Will Wheaton. Nobody cares about him, whatever.
Yeah. But we're okay with that because I honestly didn't think we had any shot in the hell of getting a panel. So, okay, whatever.
It'll just end up being us just playing Jeopardy by ourselves. It'll be like recording a normal episode.
Except there'll be more echo.
Yeah.
And we will be recording it in some fashion. You know, while we have not, well, I guess Mike and I have participated in it, but we do have experience with recording these kinds of panels, so it should be fine, and we'll be able to have that for everyone who's not there. But if you are going to PAX East, or if you were on the fence about it, you can come see us on Friday and hang out with us and eat dim sum, play video games and shit. It'll be great. Unfortunately, it'll only be Scott and me, because everyone else can't go.
It's kind of a drive. It would be kind of a drive for me
from Alaska.
Yeah. You'd have to. I wonder if you can plug that into Google Maps, and they're like, just drive 4 days to Canada.
I think it would just say, "Don't bother.
Just go east."
It would say, "Go to PAX Prime."
Yeah.
But I will be writing questions with some other people. So
yeah,
and it'll be a it'll be a full Jeopardy round. None of this silly little three categories per round. We're gonna do six categories.
It might not be.
What?
Zach and I are, well, I will tell you now that Zach and I are collaborating on a Penny Arcade category.
Yes.
We should do two Penny Arcade categories. One easy one for single.
We'll do one for each round.
Yeah.
The current rough draft for the panel is that probably half of it will be Jeopardy, and the other half will be some sort of more listener interaction.
Wait, what?
Yeah, well, I mean, because we can't really involve the listeners, or the, I guess the audience members, if we just do a straight fucking game of Jeopardy, Zach.
For an hour, yeah.
Who cares?
It's connectivity. We have to
screw connect. You, listeners.
Yeah, but, so there might be some one-on-one trivia, or at least just some Q&A or something.
Yeah.
But, so Scott and I will be there. We'll be emceeing the event. My lovely wife, Lauren, will be Vanna Whiting it up, even though that's a different show. But,
We'll probably have to call it something other than Jeopardy, too.
Yeah.
Connectity, I don't know.
Quizity.
Carl Castaneda will be a part of the panel as well, and we're looking into possibly getting a special guest, and I think we will have, regardless of anything, we will have three contestants for Jeopardy. We're still figuring things out, but we will have more confirmed details as time goes on. So check out the website, listen to the podcast, and you'll be all up to date on that.
Yeah.
We're going to, and also, Radio Free Nintendo's having another panel as well. Theirs is on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Both of the panels are in the Arachnid Theater. I know Johnny's playing some, hopefully big things for the RFN panel. I know he's definitely going. Greg, probably not. Hopefully James and John, well, I would assume Lindemann's gonna be there because he fucking lives in Boston.
Yeah.
Considering that I think we're staying at his apartment in some way, shape, or form, so I would hope that he's going to go, or else that would be weird. but it's going to be really cool. We're going to have more than just the panels playing, too. Like, hopefully, like, you know, it'll be like, you know, meet up in the board game room and play some shit.
Yes.
It'll be good times.
Or the retro games. That's where I want to be.
The retro game. That's usually where I am anyway.
Yeah.
So it works out.
You should play Talisman.
We'd have to, like, maybe if we could bring a little, like, 4-track recorder, it'd be cool to do a recorded segment from PAX, too. Like, afterwards,
we actually,
back in the hotel or something.
We did that, or at least I know Mike was a part of the Magic Cast.
Oh, there was a Magic Cast, and then there was the Drunk Cast from 2010 that also...
Yes.
And then there was the Drunk Cast from 2011, which shall remain unreleased forever.
Yes, yes. This is
Red
exactly
Velvet.
This is what I want to happen.
I still listen to it from
it'll,
time
it'll be
time.
A good time. But yeah. So anyway, we're here to talk about the news.
I guess.
And let's start off with, I guess we'll call this the trifecta of news stories where Neil beats his chest and is just like, what? I broke this shit. First off, Madden is coming to Wii this year, which is kind of weird.
That is.
A little bit.
I mean, as a big fan of those games, I'm glad to see it, but it just also seems kind of weird that Madden NFL 13 is coming to the Wii in August, possibly like a month or two before Wii U comes out. But it's not really that weird, because usually Madden's the last game released on every system ever.
That's true, yeah. I mean, didn't the PS2 get like up to just a few years ago was still getting Madden games?
I'm pretty sure they got Madden last year, but yeah, Madden 12 was the last PS2
game.
Yeah,
because I think they were just porting the Wii version, or vice versa, for a while.
Well, I guess I'll do my little bit of explaining, because I am kind of oddly intimately familiar with the series on Wii. It was a straight-up PS2 port with Waggle from 07 to 09. The games, not the year. I guess it would be 06 to 08 then. And then there was a smaller team at Tiburon that then started developing a Wii Madden game exclusive for the system. And that was Madden NFL 10, and then they followed up and iterated on that for 11, 12, and I assume 13.
Yeah.
But I love them. They're definitely, I mean, they do kind of look graphically a little bad, but I have a lot of fun with them. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's like the B movie of Madden games. And I really enjoy that.
It drives me nuts that they name it a year ahead.
Well, it's because the season technically ends.
A majority of the season is in the year it starts.
You want to know what the worst shit was? Baseball games used to be like that. So, like, the baseball game that would be coming out in March for the season that runs from March 2012 to October 2012 would be, like, MLB 2K13.
Yeah, which makes no
sense. They changed that. There was one year where there was basically, like, it was, like, 2K6 and then 2K6 again or something.
It's worse for NCAA because NCAA 12 came out last year. In the NCAA,
for, like, the championship
there
game.
Are, like, maybe, like, a dozen games played between New Year's and the national championship.
Yeah.
Maybe. Probably closer to eight. Eight games, and they named it after that year.
Well, I mean, I would assume with that one, that's more because Madden is a...
Yeah, they keep it the same year as Madden. They don't want to make it look behind, but they should both be the year they start.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but it's also at this point, like, it's
they can't do it
because
they have to skip a year or double down on a year.
Yep. But yeah, so Madden is coming to Wii, but oddly enough, Madden is not coming to 3DS, and Madden NFL Football was a 3DS launch game that was actually
that's probably why
it was developed by EA's North Carolina studio, and as far as I know, it was basically built from the ground up, especially for 3DS. Like, I think they may have used some assets from other games. I don't think they used anything from the Wii game. I want to say it was, like, you know, maybe a better version of the PS2 game or the PSP game or something. But that was made for the 3DS, was a launch title, and now it is dead, for all we know. So, yeah.
Seems weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean
it's
especially,
surprising.
Well, I would assume that the Wii version is probably, I mean, maybe the sales are actually good on the Wii version. And, I mean, at this point, they're probably just committed to bringing it out, whereas I guess the 3DS version, because they had the launch game, maybe they had time to look at the sales and be like, eh, it's not worth it.
I guess so, but don't you think they're going to make a version for Vita? Can't they just kind of scale it back some?
They are making a version for Vita.
So
they're making
one for... to see how poorly that sells.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think the PSP Madden games did very well.
But no one owns a Vita.
I was going to say to consider the install base.
The Madden games on DS were also discontinued after Madden 2009 because they didn't sell well and they did not really perform up to expectations.
No, anyone who's into Madden is going to buy it on a console.
Yeah, most likely. And I think there is that PSP thing. I actually, there was like a 2-month period when I was in college where I worked a second job at a GameStop. And a New York Giants player actually came in and bought a PSP that came with Madden.
Nice.
So I think that might be the market for Madden on PSP.
Well, he travels a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys think they'll port, like, the HD version of Madden to Wii U when it comes out?
Most definitely.
Even if it comes out, like, in November or December or something?
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure they've done that for every major console launch ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you do get into that kind of gray area where it's like, I don't think Vita's getting a Madden game. But, I mean, it's way off base, whereas, you know, like, Wii got a Madden game at launch, PS3, 360.
3DS.
I think GameCube, Xbox, and PS2 all got Madden games at launch, even though they came out, you know, in November.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in the football season. Yeah. I mean, I still think Madden launching with the 3DS was kind of weird, because it was like, football ended 2 months ago, now play this football video game.
So, Neil, would you pick up Madden on Wii when it comes out, or would you just wait for Wii U then?
I, at this point, like, I adore the Madden Wii games, and it's the kind of thing where at this point, like, I'm locked in. Whatever Wii Madden games come out, I'll totally get. Although I have thought, especially with my newly added Kinect and Madden 13 on 360 supported Kinect, I might go 360 and...
Oh, God.
So I can, you know, like, I don't better know
better turn up the play clock, because it's going to take forever to call plays with your hand.
You have to draw the plays out on the screen. No, but I mean, in all honesty, I actually have thought about that maybe I will get the HD version of the next one, but I'm not really sure. It's too far out. Yeah. I'd like to actually see what they're going to add to both the Wii and the 360 PS3 version before I make my call. I would have gotten the 3DS version in a heartbeat, though.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of the big bummer, is that I was really looking forward to, especially after playing the launch title Madden game, because if you read my review, it's a very solid game of football. It's just that, like, there was nothing around it. There was no franchise mode. There was basically just, like, a season mode that didn't even track statistics throughout. Like, it would, like, you would play each game and it would keep track of your record, but it would not keep track of, like, you know, this quarterback threw for 4 touchdowns. It would just, like, reset at the end of every game.
That's so weird.
But it was, like, when you played the game, it was great. It's just that there was nothing else.
What was our next story?
Mario Tennis Open might be the name of the new Mario Tennis game on 3DS, according to a Gamefly listing. And it also gave it a release date of May 20th. However, the day after this Gamefly listing was put up, it was taken down. Oh. And when contacted Nintendo for comment, I made some cheeky remark about how you're probably just going to say Nintendo does not comment on rumors and speculation, and then they replied, and they were like, you're right, Nintendo does not comment on rumors and speculation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it could be, who knows.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty credible, because Gamefly has done a couple things like that before. Like, I think they spoiled the past 2 Spider-Man games. At least the exact release dates, and I think one of the characters in Shattered Dimension, and I think the existence of Edge of Time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I think that I think it's pretty legit. I mean, it might not be exactly May 20th, and you know the name could change, but I guess we're looking at Mario Tennis being our next 3DS game after Spirit Camera, or at least our next 3DS game from Nintendo. I'm excited for Mario Tennis. I would play the hell out of that game.
This is going to be my first Mario Tennis game, so
I'm hoping that RPG stuff. I never got into Mario Tennis.
Yeah, I played it on a rented Virtual Boy a lot, but that's it.
Yeah, I think I've actually...
I played a good amount of it on one of either the GameCube or maybe the N64.
I played a lot of it.
One of my friends had it, and we played a little bit of it, I guess.
I really like the N64 version. I got the new Play Control version. I did not really dig that too much of Mario Power Tennis, the GameCube one. And the Game Boy ones are pretty good because, you know, they got that whole RPG thing going for them. And Mario's Tennis on Virtual Boy is rather excellent. And it's the first Mario Tennis game, actually. But yeah. Our next story is that Japan gets the first set of 3DS DLC. I'm woefully underprepared for this one. I kind of tuned it out once I saw that it was some kind of Mario exploitation.
Yeah.
Did either of you guys actually look at this?
Nope.
Shit.
But there it is. It is proven. It exists, and it is a thing that you can spend money on.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is the first Thana, for Nintendo. The Thana Rhythm things were beaten out. They were supposed to be the first games with DLC.
I think this was just some kind of like skin or like stationery.
Yeah, it was in
a
Tobidasu Print Club Kiradeko Revolution, a photo booth application in the on the eShop in Japan.
Oh yeah, so it's basically just like more stickers or some kind of shit.
We're missing out.
Yeah, you could get all these different downloadable packs of stickers and backgrounds.
Ooh boy!
Each pack costs 100 yen. Yep. But next. According to Don Koopman, the whole experience was easy to do. So that's cool. I believe you can do in-game purchasing. But, yeah. So, DLC. It's a thing.
Woo.
We're going to see more of it.
It's only like 7 or 8 years late now.
Yeah.
Isn't Zen Pinball getting downloadable tables soon?
Yeah, I know. I believe.
Yeah, and so is Pinball Arcade when that comes out. It'll have downloadable tables.
On Zen Pinball 3D, the guys Zen Studios who made that made some comment that I think they said, like, it'll be announced in, like, 2 or 3 months. And when they said that, if you looked ahead 2 or 3 months, it was around GDC.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking we might hear more about Nintendo's, or Nintendo of America's DLC plans at GDC.
That would make sense.
I know that this is, like, considered the first foray into DLC for Nintendo, and I guess first party it is, but wasn't there DLC for the Final Fantasy WiiWare game?
Oh, yeah, and there were also, I mean, Rock Band songs and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah,
Nintendo-specific, the first paid DLC they've done.
That's true.
But, yeah, because they did have stuff on Wii. I mean, the Rock Band and Guitar Hero songs. Samba de Amigo had shit you could get.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Final Fantasy, Crystal Chronicles, My Life as a King.
That's right. What it was, yeah.
I still remember that.
I liked that game for what it was.
From everyone that I talked to, it was very good. I just, it's not really my type of game.
Yeah.
It wasn't mine either, which is why I stopped playing it after a while. But
it was just something new that was different.
Yeah.
Radiant Historia is getting a reprint. I believe that's coming out in March.
Yes.
This excellent RPG from Atlus that if you guys don't have, you should totally get it.
And
if you like Super Nintendo era RPGs.
How can you not?
I was going to say, this sounds awesome, and I really want to get it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of most RPGs, actually.
Okay, so everyone except for Mike, get this game.
I was just like Pokemans.
Very good.
Pokemans. I just finished Chrono Cross, and I was like thinking, man, I want like an old school RPG to play. Like, I need a new one.
The problem I have
one.
With old school RPGs is they are almost universally way too fucking long for me to play.
Do you need to wash Chrono Cross out of your mouth or something, Scott?
No,
I've never played Chrono Cross.
I love Chrono Trigger
a lot. Chrono Trigger is one of the only ones I've beaten.
I loved Chrono Cross, actually, and I loved how it tied into Chrono Trigger. I think we're actually going to do a bonus segment about that.
Yeah,
soon.
I need to refresh my memory. When I get my PS3 back, I might have to put that in and refresh my memory about that game. I really dug Chrono Cross, like, warts and all.
Yeah.
It's definitely got its parts where you're just like, really? That's what they're doing to these characters from Chrono Trigger? Like, seriously? But I really like that game. With these kind of RPGs, I'm very picky about it. I'm not the kind of person who's just going to play anything that resembles a Super Nintendo RPG or an RPG in general.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, like, I love me some Final Fantasy VI and Final Fantasy IV. I like the Dragon Quest games a lot, you know. But I don't have any interest in going out and playing, like, and basically everything that's not on a DS that Square Enix puts out.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's my thing, is that, like, it needs to be special in some way. And Radiant Historia is that to a T. I mean, it's probably one of the freshest RPGs I've played in years. And, I mean, maybe that'll be set back by Xenoblade when I finally play that when it comes out in April.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, too.
Yeah, I have it pre-ordered from GameStop. And I know, Patrick, you had the same issue that I had when you pre-ordered at GameStop, and they're just like, no one else is pre-ordering this.
Oh, really? Maybe I should pre-order mine, then.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to get any in. That's how GameStop works, is they punish you for not pre-ordering.
Right.
You're not
stocking
it.
Same shit with the Circle Pad, where I actually pre-ordered my Circle Pad 2 days before it came out, and they got the one that I pre-ordered and one other Circle Pad.
Yeah, it was the same at my GameStop, actually. Same thing. They got two. One was reserved by the guy who worked there, and then the other one I bought.
I still haven't gotten my Circle Pad because everyone's sold out everywhere.
You can buy them online direct from Nintendo.
Oh, I should do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then you don't have to support the Evil Empire.
Right. It's so awesome. It makes Resident Evil so much better.
It really does. I mean, it's not that Resident Evil is lacking outside of that, but it's very good.
Hmm.
We also have the Metal Gear Solid 3D demo is coming out. As of recording tomorrow, as of you listening to this, it is already out. So let us know how it is.
I'm excited to play this. Much like the Resident Evil Revelations demo, I have no intention of getting the game. I enjoyed the Revelations demo. I'm just not that into the series. And same with this. I've already played through most of Snake Eater, and I'm not going to play it on a friggin' portable, even if it is in 3E.
Yeah.
It's too big of a game to play on a tiny screen like that. I don't understand why these companies decide to do things like that. I guess it's just easier to port an existing game over, and it's a good, I guess, test to see how it is working with the hardware. But yeah.
Yeah, I never played it.
I'll play the demo.
It's the only mainline Metal Gear game I never played, so I'm kind of excited to try the demo and see if it's worth picking up.
I've played all of them. It's probably the one I played the least of, though I really enjoyed it. It's got a lot of really interesting mechanics. It probably stands alone better than any of the other ones.
Except for
maybe the original Metal Gear Solid 2. Forget about the story. It's a great game, but the story is a mess.
It is. It really is.
You really have to play all the other games. And 4 is the same way in that the story is very reliant on you knowing what the fuck is going on in all of these other games.
Well, yeah, because it tries to tie everything together, and it's just way too much.
It's good, though. 4 is really good. It's just super complicated. I got to the last, it's split into, 5 acts, and I got to the last act of it, and I can't do it.
Well, you're probably for the best. The final fight in that game just turns into, a Tekken match.
I kind of figured that...
It does. Spoiler alert, it literally does. It's so
spoiler alert, but I kind of figured that the best part of Metal Gear Solid 4 was almost certainly the part where you got to pilot fucking Metal Gear X.
Yes.
And I basically, I played, the first, 20 minutes after that, and I was like, there's no way the game could be better after this. I'm just going to stop. The Metal Gear Rex part was so, sneaking back into Outer Haven.
Yeah.
Going through all of Metal Gear Solid, basically, again. And then, but at the end, you get to fucking drive Metal Gear Rex. It's so great.
Yeah, it was
and
really
fight
great.
Ray.
Yeah, that's the best part in any Metal Gear Solid game.
And I don't know if you guys played Dead Space 2, but Dead Space 2 has a very similar kind of nostalgic area.
It does, yeah. No, Dead Space 2 is awesome. And yeah, when you board the ship from the first game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I always hoped they would, quickly make another Metal Gear game with, the same engine as 4, because I thought the mechanics were really well implemented. It was just that story was so terrible.
I was kind of excited for that game when it first was announced.
That was the game that I bought a PlayStation 3 for.
Oh, yeah, me too. I actually bought the game before I bought a PlayStation.
Yeah, Neil, I mean, you could probably find it for, $5 now. I would totally
play. I thought about it, but at this point, I actually have a... I have Metal Gear Solid 3D pre-ordered. I've never played Snake Eater, so that's my Metal Gear game I'm gonna play.
There's a really great part in 4 where you're it's almost like a film noir, espionage kind of thing, where you're sneaking through some Eastern European city, I think.
Yeah.
That part's really good.
I actually thought that part was kind of frustrating, but...
It was definitely frustrating, but thematically, I think it hit home more than any other part of the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
because it really did feel Eastern European. The rest of the game felt kind of you're outside somewhere.
Yeah,
you're in the Middle East or whatever. And obviously Act 4 where you go back to Outer Haven, that hit home really well too.
Oh,
because it's Outer Haven and you already know what the fuck it's all about.
And I love when they drop you in at first and it's in the PS1 graphics. So great.
Yeah,
they like to play gags like that.
To bring it back to the demo though, I hope they show you how you can use the cameras to make camouflage. Aren't you supposed to be able to take pictures of your couch and make camouflage from it?
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be the worst. I don't know why anyone would do it.
It's
you're not going to blend in with anything.
No, I know.
I do remember at E3. I think it was James and I were in a round table where I was interviewing a producer of the game. And there was a translator and stuff. And they were talking about how, I guess there was some Konami event, and they were our big reveal of you can take picture of camouflage and have it in the game. I'm like, really? That's what you're fucking adding to this game? I just want to play the game at this
great
point.
So now I can have my dog's face. Yeah. I have my dog's face plastered all over my outfit.
Exactly. Or my dick.
Yeah.
You said it, not me.
Well, I know what I'm doing in the demo tomorrow.
Oh, shit.
I'll be at work during my lunch break putting, what are you doing with your 3DS down your pants? I need camouflage.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this will be the fourth, maybe fifth time I've played Metal Gear Solid 3.
Wow. This will be the first.
I just started it on the HD collection, and boy, does it look good in
I think
HD.
All
My
Metal
gosh.
Gear, I think all Metal Gear Solid games would be better if they were given the Twin Snakes treatment and just made turn everything up to 11.
Yeah. Twin Snakes was great. That was really my first experience to the series, and I played 1 and 2. But I never played 3, so it kind of works out that
I played a little bit of 2, but Twin Snakes is so fucking good.
Yeah.
The best part in Twin Snakes is when he jumps off a rocket.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then fires his own rocket at the hind.
Yeah, it's so over the top.
So over the top. They're like, hey, we saw this movie, The Matrix. Let's see exactly.
Plus, it's got all like the little Silicon Knights references in it. That's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff is cool. And then like you can find like the little like Mario and Yoshi dolls like on the like computer desk somewhere.
And then there's a picture of Dennis Dyack.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
I love when game developers used to just put pictures of themselves and everything. Yeah. And Geist, they're all over the place.
Yeah, and Geist, they're
all
everywhere
at that game.
Wasn't there even wasn't there a picture of Miyamoto like in the Psycho
Mantis?
It's
fight? Miyamoto, Dyack, and Kojima are all in Psycho Mantis' room laughing at you.
Nice. So that's good. Right. Yeah, I remember that now.
Or even back in the GoldenEye days, where it's just like all the scientists and weapons were just guys from Rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Ken Lobb, worst gun in the game.
It was.
On purpose.
But yeah, well, let's move on.
Yeah. The last bit of news is that Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D, published by Atari and developed by Nspace, is currently on hold. As far as I know, like, this game's pretty much done. I just don't know what the hell Atari's doing. Then again, The Core Gang, which was a game that came out last year for Wii, was a game that I think was finished and released in Europe about a year or two before the game came out in North America. So, Atari's just fucking crazy.
Yeah, Atari is so mismanaged. It's
like,
kind of
how
amazing.
Are they still around?
They're not really. They are a name that has been traded between like three or four different companies. So
that's all they are now is a name.
Yep.
Yeah. And the name has absolutely no credibility left to it. So I don't know why people keep buying it.
Yeah.
The only people who still think Atari is a credible name are like your grandmother. Oh, Atari, they make games. I'll buy one for little Neil.
Or those dorks who just wear like Atari t-shirts that buy at Target.
Yeah.
It's got nostalgia value. Like on a t-shirt, it almost looks kind of cool still, but no one would be caught dead buying an Atari game. First of all, I don't even know what games they make apart from, I know they make Roller Coaster Tycoon.
And shitty Godzilla fighting games.
Centipede game last year. That was by way forward, so it can't be that bad.
I mean, they're really just a publisher. They don't even make games. They were making games a couple years ago. I feel like maybe a decade ago, they were still when they were, they were owned by some French company, I think.
Infogrames, or however.
Yeah, Infogrames owned them.
Yeah.
And they were making shit games back then.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to some listener mail. We got a bunch from our good friend Kentucky Tim. I'm just going to rattle them off, and we'll just do them one by one.
Assign them to each of us.
Give us each of us a question answer. That's good.
Because there's a lot of us on this panel.
Yeah, might as well.
All right.
Copy-paste that shit, Neil.
Will the Wii U controller allow Wii and Virtual Console games to be streamed to the controller screen? Patrick.
Sorry. Virtual Console games, I can see it. Probably new Virtual Console games. I'm still a little iffy on whether it's going to allow you to transfer the games over from your Wii.
So you're in that camp.
Well, they let you transfer games from DSi to 3DS, so they've got it worked out.
I think it's going to happen. It's inevitable that the VC games
should happen,
that have come
but
out.
It's Nintendo, and I just don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, you just never
know.
See,
if DSiWare games were not able to be transferred to 3DS, I would agree with you, but they were. So I think we're going to be able to have the VC games go to Wii U.
We better, because I've got, like, I mean, we all have a good chunk of change in VC games.
I mean, I think the WiiWare games will be there too. I mean, I imagine there might be some games, much like how there's a couple DSiWare games that didn't make it, or even like when you have Rock Band 1 and 2 and export to Rock Band 3, you're missing some songs. Like licenses might have expired, companies might be dead.
At the very least, all your first-party games should transfer over.
All the Nintendo games will probably be able to be transferred over, but like, for example, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was delisted from the VC recently, that's not going to be able to be transferred over.
Yeah. You're probably sad. Right.
Assuming they do transfer over, though, I'm sure they're going to be able to be streamed to the controller.
I would think so. Yeah.
They are being transferred over.
Right. That seems like
people think that, oh yeah, people will just be pissed for a week. No, this will harbor a lot of resentment. And I think if Nintendo were to do a move like this, it would almost be the kind of thing where it's like, this is where they lost their fans. Like, you can mark that one event where it's just like, they just flip their middle finger and they're like, you're gonna buy this shit again. Yeah. And it might not happen directly after that, because let's get real, we probably will buy this shit again, but that would be a beginning of the end.
Yeah,
the problem.
The Wii U too. But I'm hoping that when the Wii U comes out, they're going to be like, and we've got like 100 new games on all the console, like all the virtual consoles, since we haven't released anything in like a year.
I hope they at least have like, when Wii launched, they had like 15, 20 VC games came out with it. I hope they have something like that.
Yeah, they'll have a push.
Maybe they do have a couple, you know, like maybe there's a GameCube game on it. Maybe like Luigi's Mansion is going to be downloadable.
Oh,
on it.
That would be so great.
That would be fucking amazing.
Isn't that a question coming up that Kentucky Tim asks about?
Is that,
I think so.
Yeah, finally, what are the merits of a service like the Virtual Console? Will GameCube and Dreamcast games be available for the Wii U's Virtual Console? Scott, answer that one.
Ooh, shit, on the spot. yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think that'd be really great. I don't see why not.
I could definitely see Dreamcast coming. Saturn, I think, would be kind of out of the question because of how hard it is to emulate Saturn.
GameCube, I think, will be a question of whether or not the unit can still play discs.
Yeah.
Mm.
The new Wii's don't.
I think they're going to take that out. I mean, the new Wii's don't.
Actually, Wii U, you guys should read the site more often, because back at E3, we broke this story. Wii U will not support GameCube.
Okay, yeah,
games.
Exactly. No, it won't.
Then it'll happen then.
Yeah, it'll be on the Virtual Console.
They'll have them up there. Yeah, that would be really cool. I mean, what if they could even like emulate Saturn games and get some Saturn games up there? Saturn's like the hardest thing to emulate.
Yeah.
Because there's like two separate processors or something, and it's just a really wonky system. But why not?
Want that though. Saturn games.
There are a couple games that people
Saturn
want.
Games. And what like is about firefighters?
Panzer Dragoon.
Panzer Dragoon.
Oh, yeah, Dragoon. Yeah.
People love Panzer Dragoon.
Even the original Knights.
Super Shark.
Yeah, Knights. Nah.
Really, Super Shark? Come on.
Yeah,
Super
Shark. I think for sure. I think why not? I'm interested to see what they would be priced, but.
Isn't Sega CD, couldn't we get some Night Trap up in this bitch? That was, I mean, going back to PAX East, that was one of the
crisscross
last
made my
year,
video.
Was playing some Night Trap. That's the first time I ever played Night Trap, and I don't think
they
I really played it.
They should remake Night Trap.
No, they shouldn't.
Because the actress who did Night Trap is dead now.
Ooh.
Creepy. Next question, Neil.
Will Resident Evil 6 and GTA 5 be launch titles for the Wii U? Keep in mind that RE6 has a release date of November 20th, 2012, which would coincide with the probable launch of the Wii U.
Yes.
Mike, answer this one.
It's like being picked for baseball.
One, that's not going to be the launch of the Wii U. The Wii U is coming out on November 18th.
Sunday before Black Friday?
Yes.
Guaranteed.
Booking it. November 18th.
If it's not out in I do feel like there is a chance it could come out in September.
I
give that maybe 20% chance of it coming out in September.
I thought the same thing about Zelda.
No, the game always, the top tier game always comes out Sunday before Black Friday. The only reason I would say September for the system is that it clearly is something that they have been working on for a long time, and they've never in the past said this could come out at any point this year. They've always said it'll come out in the holiday quarter with all these other consoles.
Yeah.
So I feel like they might squeeze it in at the very beginning of the holiday quarter at the end of September. A lot of big games come out then. That's when Gears 3 came out. That's when Halo Reach came out. Like
that's when Skylanders came out.
Yeah, it's the very start of the holiday season.
Yeah.
If it's not at the very start of the holiday season, it'll be Sunday before Black Friday.
Yeah,
and I will
basically be like
that.
Late September or November 18th, 2012.
Especially since they've been so burned on the 3DS and they really feel like, oh, 3DS, we shouldn't have launched this in March. That was a really horrible idea.
Yeah.
And I feel like if the 3DS had done well, I think that would lend more credence to a September launch. But the fact that it's not makes me think that they will revert, like they will revert back to their old ways Sunday before Black Friday.
I still really enjoy, like, I think there was an interview with Reggie, maybe around the holiday time, or, I mean, whatever they were talking about, where they kept on reiterating Wii U coming out between E3 and the end of the year, where, like, somebody asked him, like, could it, like, come out right after E3? And Reggie just, like, you know, I assume he just gave him a shit-eating grin and was just like, maybe. Who knows?
Sure.
Where just, like, just picturing, like, being in that interview and Reggie just with that smug-ass smile, shrugging the shoulders, just being like, maybe.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
Speaking of a Saturn, wasn't that the one that released, like, during E3?
Yeah.
It came out like 2 days later.
They had this whole thing planned, like, Saturn Day and everything, and then they're just like, guess what? It's out right now.
Yeah.
And then all the retailers got pissed.
Yeah.
Because they weren't given any time to prepare.
Yep.
So
anyways,
GTA 5.
GTA 5.
Resident Evil, I feel like maybe. But 5, yeah. Did 5 come out? Did 5 come out on the Wii? It didn't.
No.
Oh, no.
But that's because it wasn't graphically comparable. The Wii U will be graphically comparable.
Yes.
Right.
So maybe.
Yeah.
Nintendo has a very good relationship with Capcom, so.
And now that Revelations is on 3DS, so it's going to happen.
I think so.
GTA 5, who the hell knows? Maybe? I don't even care. I
don't
sick
either.
Of GTA games at this point. Unless it takes place in 1980s Vice City, I'm not playing it.
Yeah. The next question. Could Retro Studios be working on the next Star Fox for Wii U? If so, would this be a good idea, and how could they revitalize the series? Neil. No. They're working on it. I really doubt it. I mean, we know that Retro is working on a Wii U title, and we know that it is something that, like, it's the game they've always wanted to make. I guess there's a small chance it could be Star Fox, but I just think that they are not the right team for Star Fox.
Do you think it's an original IP?
I don't think so. If it's the game they always wanted to make, I assume it would be based off of a notable Nintendo franchise. That's why, I mean, my prediction for it is that they are working on another Zelda game. That's what I kind of believe.
I know you do. We've actually talked about this like five times.
Yeah, I think Nintendo will never hand Zelda off to a Western developer.
I think that fucking Miyamoto said it. He said, I think Retro would do a good job on Zelda. And I bet you that there's somewhere like, you know, like Tanabe-san or something. It's just like, that son of a bitch. He did it when he talked about cats. He talked about swimming the one time and we had to cancel Wii Swim. Damn it, Miyamoto.
Swim.
I think that happened. Because, I mean, usually what Miyamoto kind of teases, that's what he's doing. Like, he did talk about how, like, I got a cat and I've had fun with that. Nintendogs and Cats came out. He talked about gardening.
Yeah, he's
Pikmin
got loose lips.
Out. Yeah. And I think his comment, where he made the comment about, like, yeah, you know, I think Retro would do a good job on Zelda. I think, I mean, that's really when I started to believe that I think that I believe that Retro Studios is working on a Zelda game that will be revealed at E3 this year and likely come out in 2013.
I will not be the least bit surprised if they are working on a 3DS Zelda game.
Yeah, that I can see.
That could be it.
They'll be the new Capcom studio doing handheld Zeldas.
That could be it, because we do know that the 3DS Zelda game is being worked on.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised. They hand Zelda off to... We've talked about this on the show before. Next question.
But Star Fox for Wii U should be Q Games or Treasure.
Right.
Oh, God, Treasure would make the best.
Who are the people that say Nano Assault?
Shinnen. Shinnen would be another good Star Fox team.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is I feel like those three studios before Retro. Like, I don't think Retro would make a great Star Fox game. They would probably just make Star Fox Assault Part 2.
Yeah.
Which I would enjoy, but it wouldn't be a great Star Fox game.
Next question was okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I acknowledge its faults. Is there any possibility that Nintendo could allow 3DS to stream to the Wii U so that handheld games could be played on the bigger screen with the Wii U? Imagine playing Resident Evil Revelations on a big LCD flat screen and use the U-mote as the controller. Zach?
Hi. No. No chance in hell.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever happen.
I don't think that'll happen, but I do think there is a good possibility that the 3DS will be able to function as some sort of pseudo-controller.
Well, sure.
Or there will be some sort of connectivity between the systems.
Yeah.
This connectivity thing works. It's a good idea. It doesn't work when you need 4 Game Boys and 4 Game Boy connection cables.
Yeah.
It does work when it's all wireless, and it all works.
And when everyone you know owns a 3DS. Like, I feel like the 3DS by that time will be much more widespread than the Game Boy Advance was.
Yeah.
Well, Game Boy Advance was super widespread, but you couldn't, one, you couldn't find those cables anywhere, and two, no one really knew what they were for, it wasn't promoted well.
Yeah.
It just, if it just works with no accessories, it'll, it can take off. Sony's doing it with the Vita.
Yep.
Or maybe we'll be able to transfer our games.
Please stop saying
I want to transfer things. We need to transfer more often, man.
Can we change the name of the podcast to Transfer?
Transfarity?
No, isn't it Kinect with a K-I-N-E-C-T?
No, that's next week's bonus segment.
It will be next week, yeah.
With the success of Resident Evil Revelations, is there any chance that the door could be open for more mature-rated games to be made for the 3DS? I would love to see a No More Heroes and Dead Space for the 3DS sometime in the future.
Oh my god, Dead Space would be so great.
This was actually, I went to the EA event that I talked about last week, and I was told there was going to be a 3DS game revealed, which was incorrect. But I had a feeling, I was like, you know what? Dead Space would be really awesome on the 3DS.
Yes.
And I still stand by that. That would be fantastic. I would love to see a Dead Space game on 3DS.
For now, I would even just be okay if they just ported the iOS Dead Space over and just gave it real controls.
Yes, because I have that game on my iPod Touch, and my thumb takes up the entire fucking screen.
Yeah, you can't
see
anything.
So it's hard to see. But I can tell it's an amazing game.
Yeah, it's a technical marvel, really. But yeah, I think that would be awesome. Make it downloadable, charge, I don't know, I don't care, charge $10 for it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would do that.
I'd buy it in a heartbeat.
Play with the CirclePad Pro, I mean, totally. But yeah, I would love a more mature game. I don't know about you guys, but playing Resident Evil Revelations, I find like it's more tense. I don't know if it's just because it's in my face, like, because I'm holding it so close to my face and I'm playing with the headphones on. Like, to me, it's much scarier than if I was playing it on a TV across the room from myself.
I agree.
Legitimately, like, jumped during one moment, because I was really into it, and then a fucking thing just dropped from the ceiling. Right. And, like, I was sitting in a chair, and I just went like, whoa! And, like, shook.
I got
spooked by something in a movie or something.
What did you guys think of Rachel? The first fight with Rachel?
Scary?
I was freaking terrified.
I mean, just because you hear her, like, talking and laughing, like, as you're going, before you even see her, you just hear her, like, whispering and stuff.
Is that the second boss where you find her, where she got turned into the zombie?
Yeah.
There's a lot of intense moments.
And you
like
chase
that.
Her through the one hallway.
Yep. Exactly, yep.
I mean, you don't know when she's gonna pop out. That was a pretty excellent fight.
Yep.
Yeah. That fight took you through the one room. There was the bathroom on the ship where there's the stalls, and every time you go in there, I hear the water running, and I swear the zombie's going to pop out of the bathroom stall.
You're just waiting for it.
It's just as I walk up to the stall, it doesn't pop out of there. It falls out of the ceiling right on top of you.
Yeah, really well executed. Really well-paced game, too. I mean, there's these lulls where nothing's happening, and then they just hit you with something, and it's always so great. The only thing that sucks are the water enemies, I think. But
yeah, I did not like the water segment. I just played, I guess, the first water-ish area that you play.
Well, do you use those pulse grenades on him?
But you only get, like, two of them.
Yeah, you don't have them right away.
That's true. Well, let me tell you, in raid mode, once you boost up your stats, you're eventually carrying, like, 14 of them, and you can just blow them all away.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Oh my gosh, raid mode is so good.
I know, I've only dabbled in it. I'm, like, a level 7 or 8, but it's really, really good.
I think I'm on chapter 6 of the campaign. And I think raid mode I'm level 5 or 6, but I really enjoy it. We're actually gonna do a community night for Resident Evil raid mode on either the February 24th, 25th, or 26th. Let me tell everybody right now,
the goal for that community night is to get through the ghost ship.
Okay.
Okay. You haven't got there, Neil. It's the last level of raid mode, and it is so hard. I think you can beat it with one person.
Cool.
Yeah, it is.
All right, well, I think Mike is going to pass out from hunger, and I gotta get going,
too. Yeah, I've been eating in about 12 hours.
Well, all right. Holy crap.
All right, so that's a connectivity news segment.
That's what that is.
Panel in April, guys. It's going to be great.
Have fun
later.
Me.
Woo!
Thank you.
So I'm here with Danny Bivens from Japan and Don Kootman from the Europe. And I'm Neil Ronahan from the USA.
Could you be a piece more specific? Because Europe is a very big continent, you know?
No, it's not.
I was going to say, USA is pretty big, too. I'm just, you know, I'm being nationalistic for this podcast right now.
Damn you.
USA, USA.
Go Japan.
European football, well, go.
I guess to be more specific, Don is in the Netherlands, and I'm in New Jersey. So
I'm in Saitama Prefecture, obviously. Yes. Right. Not obviously.
But we are going to talk about Sakura Samurai Art of the Sword, or as they call it in Japan, Danny.
Hirari Sakurai Samurai. Sakura Samurai.
Yes. Or, as they call it in Europe, it's not out yet.
I suppose that they'll just go with Sakura Samurai.
That's fine.
Yeah, I would assume so. Maybe maybe they'll change the subtitle slightly, but...
Or making the title even longer to make it more explanatory.
Yeah. Like Sakura Samurai Letterbox.
Could be.
But yeah, so Danny and I both reviewed the game. He was a little more positive on it than I was. I personally don't really like this game that much.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's weird. And it's especially weird because it seems like everyone else likes it so much. I mean, I don't know, it's just weird to me. But the one thing, like the few things that I really liked about this game was, it looks beautiful, especially on the 3DS. I mean, they have a lot of cherry blossom stuff. There's even a neat little Street Pass, or I guess it's not even Street Pass mode, it's just like, you use the pedometer, and then you dedicate those steps, and you can unlock, like, cherry blossoms that bloom, and it looks really nice in 3D. Mm-hmm. And in general, the game, it looks very crisp. I mean, it's not like it's, you know, like, cutting edge, like, it looks like Resident Evil Revelations, but it just looks very nice. Mm-hmm. And the general gameplay is very Punch-Out!-esque, as, except for you're a samurai instead of, you know, a little white dude from Brooklyn or whatever. And, you know, you use your sword to look for tells that different enemies do, dodge, and then attack. And that's pretty much the game. There's three different worlds that you travel to, or I guess three lands, and a bunch of little, like, smaller events that are all on single screen with a couple enemies on them. That you go through, it's hard to really talk about anything about this game enthusiastically for me because it was just, it's a game that I did not enjoy all too much. It's okay, just I don't really think it's that great.
Yeah, fair enough. And Neil, one of the things that you mentioned in your review too is that, you know, the game is pretty slow paced and, you know, I totally agree with that too because in the combat, I mean, what you're doing, you can have, you know, a screen full of maybe, you know, five or six guys, but they're not going to be all facing you all. You know, they're not going to, like, gang up on you and just destroy you all at once. I mean, it's just a one-on-one kind of a thing. And that kind of plays to the, I guess, to the Punch-Out kind of thing where you have to, you know, kind of look at their tells and stuff like that so you can dodge, at, you know, just right, just at the right moment to get out of the way and then attack. One element that they have in the game too that I talked about a little bit in my review is, you know, with the dodging, I don't exactly know what they call it in English.
Precision points?
Oh, precision points. Precision
okay,
points.
Thank you.
Yeah.
With the precision points, that, I think that can be maybe a bigger part of the game that's, it seems kind of like maybe it's even like a little bit overlooked. Cause I mean, even if you dodge, you know, at the right second, then there's a counter at the bottom of the screen. You know, that's keeping track of that constantly. And another thing.
Yeah, and it resets whenever you, like, you know, an enemy blocks your attack or you get hit or anything.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Or even, like, I found too, even if you get too close to the enemy, they'll just kind of, like, you know, try to back you off and that breaks up too, which is kind of annoying. Cause I think one time I was up at, like, I think 70 something and then it.
Oh, wow.
Broke and I was like, are you kidding me? But. One cool thing about that too, with the precision points, I mean, if you dodge at, you know, just the right second, then that also allows you even like extra attacks and stuff like that on your enemies, which is really helpful, especially at the later parts of the game when you have enemies that are a lot stronger that aren't going to take just, you know, one swipe or, you know, a couple swipes to kill. Mm-hmm. It's like that, you know, you have just kind of a better chance to easily dispose of these guys just in case you mess up and get hit or something. So.
You can also get all of these precision points if you play your cards right.
That's right.
That's one of my things that I feel like is almost worthless about the precision points is that, Danny, you talked about in your review about how it was kind of like this high score mechanic, like, you know, beat your highest precision points thing.
Sure.
And you also mentioned when we were talking before the show about how that would be cool if there was some kind of online leaderboard
right.
for how many precision points you get.
Exactly.
Which would be really cool. But when I played the game, there didn't really seem to be any reason to really care about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you don't really have any kind of in-game bonus, except for, I mean, you do get the extra attacks, but that doesn't mean you need to keep up your precision points meter high.
Sure.
You just need to dodge correctly and, you know, get a precision point and attack, and then if you lose it, it doesn't matter because you can just do it again to get that same attack.
Sure, sure.
But you can get a lot of gold if you have a high precision point count, and then you go to the one of the stores in the towns
mm-hmm.
to cash it all in. But for me, like as using that to get gold, it didn't really seem to be worth it because there just really isn't a lot of things to buy in this game. Pretty much, you have the four. Just the three sword upgrades. And then you have different items that you can get, like there's, you know, you can sharpen your blade with a whetstone, there's health items,
yeah.
There's frogs that you can throw at enemies, there's knives you can throw at enemies. And outside of that, it's just like there's not really that much to buy, other than, like, if you're having trouble with the game. And if
yeah.
you're having trouble with the game, then I would imagine, lose a level. And then, like, the little Kappa pops up, and you can just go to that level, and it doesn't really, like, it, usually a much easier level, and you get a ton of coins
mm-hmm.
that then you can use.
It's one thing, it's very easy to break to that momentum of your precision points and then have to start all over. So it's indeed not a very good way to get your money.
Yeah.
The minigames are also... Because
you can pretty much lose it all at one misstep.
And there are also from these separate minigames to play in the little towns, which...
That are all fundamentally the same.
Yeah, but you can get some very easy money out of that. Like, if you put in all your coins and you know you're really good at it, you can get double the amount.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, I think one of the games that Don's talking about, it's like you can bet up to like 100 Rio. Do they call it Rio in the English version too, or?
No, the gold's gold.
It's just gold.
It's gold. Okay.
Just gold.
Well, whatever, it's old Japanese currency, whatever. So you're betting like 100 gold, and, you know, it's basically if you can cut like 5 watermelons, you can get at least like 150 gold back. And then if you cut like all 10 or whatnot, you can get like 300. It's pretty ridiculous. And
yeah.
If you get really good at it, then you could just start raking in the money like crazy. And I mean, I did that.
You're a hustler.
Just
taking down people's watermelons.
Yep, that's it.
You know, I'm not really that good at this. I've never really cut a watermelon before. Oh, 10 in a row. What up? Hey up.
Yep. And then you just do it again just for fun, even if you already maxed out on money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But going back to the items, even at that there are just 4 of them, like the health one, the frogs, the daggers, and the whetstone?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can only have like a certain amount on you.
Yeah, and I found that weird. I never really got to the bottom of this, but there were, because as you play the minigames, you accrue stamps, and when I got a reward for one of the stamps, then, like, I got more health items than I could carry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for a while, I had, like, I think, like, something like 8 of the health items, when you usually can only have 5.
Huh.
I never really understood that, mainly because then I wrote the review and stopped playing the game, because there was no reason after that.
Sure.
So there seems to be a way to carry more than that, but it's not permanent.
I was gonna say, because I didn't happen to come across that, and I put in, like, well, I don't know, 10, 11 hours into the game, and I don't know. If I did do it, it would have been on accident, and I probably didn't even notice. But,
but yeah, I mean, this game has a lot of cool ideas, and I'm someone who likes Punch-Out, and that's probably part of the reason why I was so disappointed by it, is that outside of the bosses, then, you know, there are 3 of them, and they are all very cool
mm-hmm.
and pretty challenging, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. That last boss is a son of a bitch.
Yeah, he is.
But all the other regular enemies, it's almost like just picture Punch-Out, but if you had to, like, go through the streets in between fights and like, beat up the same generic thug over and over again, and maybe sometimes the thug will throw rocks at you instead of punch you. And maybe he'll have, instead of like, having his fists, he'll have, like, you know, like a a dagger. Like, that's really what this game is. Except for, with Punch-Out, you have all these different colorful characters that you're fighting against, and in this game, it's just generic enemy, generic enemy, generic enemy, and there's like, what, like five different types at best?
Right, five or six, something like that.
So for me, so for you, you would say it's like Urban Champion.
Yeah, in all honesty, like, it's unfortunate, but this is like Punch-Out and Urban Champion meets Samurai Time.
I see.
I mean, it's just, except for, like, I almost wish instead of, like, killing the samurai, you could just, like, knock them into a manhole. That would be fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you talk about the colorful characters, I mean, obviously that comes out, you know, with the bosses.
Yeah, the bosses are excellent. Yeah, that's the one thing. Exactly. That's one of my favorite things about the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
it's just that there's only three of them.
Yeah. And I think too, even like the 3D effects on the bosses, that it's just, it's amazing with it. Actually, I was playing it with full 3D when I faced the first boss, and I remember I had to like turn it down because, I mean, he's like pointing that thing right at your face, like through this, it's like almost feels like it's coming to me. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know, you don't get that so much with a lot of, you know, 3DS games, so it's, I think the 3D effect on this is, it's really good, it's really well pronounced, it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's pretty incredible what they did with it, I think.
On a side note, if you do want stuff like that where like enemies attack you and it goes through the screen, mm-hmm. so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Nano Assault is coming out in Japan.
Yeah.
You should definitely check that out.
Yeah, I heard about
that. That is a fantastic game.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I'll have to do that for sure.
Yep.
I need to pick up on myself, too.
Yeah. It's weird that it's not coming to Europe yet. But anyway, Sakura
yeah.
Samurai.
Sakura Samurai.
Yes,
Sakura Samurai. And like, after you beat it, there's the three different areas. I'd say probably your first playthrough, like 3-4 hours, something like that, depending on how good you are at the game. If you have to grind more, then it'll obviously be more time.
Yeah.
And you have those three different areas, three different bosses, and then you unlock like an expert mode.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried
enemies do double damage mm-hmm. and stuff like that?
And you only have like one healing item throughout the whole duration of the game, which
yeah.
is pretty insane.
Yeah, it was brutal. I did not get far through that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
But
I mean, it's cool that it's there,
oh, yeah.
but at the same time, it's just the same damn game over again.
Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, obviously it adds a lot more challenge to it this time around too, because I mean, it's basically a one hit kill. You get hit once, you're dead after you
yeah.
get like past a certain point. And I'm almost yep. to the final castle on the hardest, you know, the hard mode. And, you know, there are some of the items you can get that make things a lot easier, but I've been trying to challenge myself and just not use those and just go through, and it's you know, you make one mistake, you're dead, and it's like, oh my god, I have to like play this again.
Yeah.
But for me, I think it's a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it, and that's why, you know, I went back to it and played it, you know, with the expert mode. One thing that I think this game does really well, you know, on top of the 3D too, I think the controls are just completely solid, and I think they absolutely have to be, especially at these boss battles, because usually, if you make a mistake, I never felt it was part of the game. If a mistake was made, it's because of me being an idiot or something, you know? I never felt that it was because it was just cheap. I don't know. How did you guys
yeah.
feel about that?
I mean, I definitely didn't think, I mean, control-wise, the game did handle very well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just, moving away with the B button and the circle pad, and then moving forward, sometimes back to attack. It works pretty well. It's very easy to handle. Although I had a few times where the camera, especially in the town and the castle area, it went a bit haywire, so I had
yeah.
to relocate it with the L and R buttons.
Yeah, so that was always kind of weird, walking around in the town and stuff like that, especially if you get hung up. Like, especially in that first town, like, I do the watermelon game, and it's like right behind you is like a woman, or it's either a woman or like a sign or something, and you just start walking towards it, the camera just kind of goes a little bit crazy, and I don't know. In the town, it's not really so good, but I mean, fortunately, you don't have to worry about it so much, when you're walking around the town. But, you know, in the battle, it's, I've never had a problem with it in the battles, really, per se. Cause it's pretty solid in the battles.
I think the most fun I had with the game was with that expert mode, which you talked about earlier, because it put out a layer of challenge for me, which I found really intriguing. And next to that, the 30, 50, 100 man challenges.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which are timed, and you have to just play through hordes of enemies to get a high score, which was just a little bit of fun.
Yeah. Like I said, and like I said before, I think they really missed out with having some kind of online leaderboards, and it's so dumb too, because if you think about it, I mean, this is a downloadable title. Who the hell wouldn't be able to get online if you bought this thing online, you know? So it's like, I don't quite understand why they couldn't have added some kind of functionality like that, you know, leaderboards for, you know, the precision points, which is stupid because those end at 99 too, which is ridiculous. So I would love to continue on to like 1,000 or something, but you stop at 99. It's like, I did that and that's it. You know, yeah, you can get a ton of money, you know, from doing that, but it's like, man, I want a little bit more of a reward than that.
It would certainly keep you enticed playing it after a while, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, then like, oh, look at Neil. Oh, he only has 6 precision points. Pfft, I have 682.
I think I crept out of like 20 one time.
But yeah, I just think they really missed it, a good opportunity with that.
Yeah, and something I didn't find out until kind of recently is who actually developed this game. Because, I mean, it's published by Nintendo, and that was obviously publicized. But it was actually developed by Grounding. And they're the team that's, you know, they got people who worked on Panzer Dragoon, Space Channel 5, Rez.
Oh, well, okay.
They're working on Project Draco on Kinect, and they've made a couple other DSiWare and WiiWare games, like Pop-Up Pursuit and The Royal Bluff.
Oh, I love
that. Which are all these book related games, but yep. So that's the developer. Which I did not really have any idea who it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really even pay attention.
I played the hell out of The Royal Bluff, especially with friends.
I don't really know anything about that game. I just remember it coming out, and I never remember hearing anything else.
It's a perfect party game if you have people with a DS around. Especially the same goes for Papa Pursuit. So that's where there are two endeavors, and this more is a single player endeavor. So that's quite interesting there.
Yeah. But
back to Sekiro Samurai. In terms of like price, I mean, I know you're a little bit, you know, have a little bit of a negative tone when it comes to your, you know, overall opinion of the game, but I mean, when it comes
it's
to
$7,
yeah,
right?
$7, it's 700 yen in Japan and unreleased in Europe as of right now. I mean, in terms of, you know, price and then like, you know, with I guess the amount of time that you've had with the game, I mean, how do you think it's like worth it? Do you think that it's a good correlation there? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I am admittedly weird when compared to other people, because I'm not one of those people that it's just like, well, I spent $10 on this game, it should give me 40 hours of gameplay. Like, I mean, you know, I got 4 or 5 hours out of it, even though I didn't like it that much. I mean, $7 for 4 or 5 hours of gameplay, I'm totally fine with that.
Sure.
I spend $10 to go and watch a movie for 2 hours, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, is it, it's more of, you know, I kind of wish I didn't spend 5 hours with it, but, like, you know, I mean, even if I didn't review it and I bought it and I still managed to put a, you know, a couple hours into it, it's not worthless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel kind of the same way. It's like, you know, I put a little bit more time in than you did, you know, even for the review. I think by the time I finished, I did the review, I think I had like 9 hours or something, but, I don't know, I felt like, man, this is like 700 yen, you know, I spent this much time with it, and I was gonna like get a little bit of a lower score because of that, but I was thinking, and it's like, hey, you know, this is only 700 yen, if this is like a, you know, a 5,000 yen game or something, you know, a $40 game, that'd be ridiculous. I'd say, okay, this is stupid. I mean, it's cool, but it's like, for that much money, what, are you kidding? But, you know, for the price, I think it's suitable for the amount of, you know, enjoyment or time that you can get out of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, see, that's the thing is that, I mean, even with longer games, like, if a game's like 10 hours and I spent $50 on it, I'm still not even really gonna be that bent out of shape. Because, like, I don't really wanna spend like 20 hours on games these days.
I understand.
It has to be a very damn good game for me to wanna spend that much time with it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I spent, I think, around 9 hours with it, and I really think it's worth the money. Again, I'm not as negative as you, Neil. I'm not as positive as Danny. I'm a bit in the middle. Little bit in the middle, sorry.
You are the middleman.
Yeah. There are some stuff that I like better. There's some stuff I hate a little more. But you could say I'm a 7.5. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I certainly think it's worth the money. But it has a very distinct taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you're somebody who absolutely loves Japan, like samurai, like that type of stuff, I think you could find, you know, you could have a good deal of fun with this game.
It is perfect for Japanophiles.
Exactly, exactly. I'm obviously somewhat of one. I live in Japan, for crying out loud. So, I mean, if that's you, then that's, you know, I think you'll find a lot of enjoyment out of this game. If that's something that you don't really particularly care for, you know, honestly, you might want to, you know, kind of stay away from it. But I think it's still solid, but, you know, there are issues. It's definitely not perfect.
All right. So Sakura Samurai, it's out in North America and Japan for approximately $7.
Mm-hmm.
It should be coming out in Europe soon, so keep an eye out on that. And
I think we get first that Fruit Space sequel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you also got Kirby's Block Ball. Instead, we got Maru's Mission. Like, what the hell?
We've had Kirby's Block Ball here for months.
Shut up.
We have there's like 47 virtual Kirby's, console games.
Kirby's Block Ball. Kirby's Block Ball is not that good.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Yeah, that's it. Sakura Samurai. It's okay, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not a bad game. It's not a great game, but it's not bad.
Talk to y'all later.
Boom.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, welcome to the discussion between myself, Zach Miller, Scott Thompson.
Hello.
And returning guest host, Andy Gergen.
Hello. It's been so long. So long.
this is going to be kind of an interesting discussion. Me and Neil got into a Twitter argument about a rumor, and I should stress this is complete speculation, that the Xbox 720, or whatever they're going to call it, I heard Durango today.
Does it have all-wheel drive?
Yes. We'll lock out used games. You won't be able to play used Xbox 720 games on the Xbox 720. I don't know how that would be done. Maybe through a download? I have no idea.
They'd probably do it through a download code, I would think.
Yeah, download code like PCs. So I started this conversation on Twitter by saying, basically, this is interesting, I'm all for it, whatever fucks GameStop in the ass. And then Neil said, wait a second. So we had a big, long argument that eventually turned into him really loving Kinect.
You know,
I'm not sure how it got there, but that's where it ended up. But
the logical train of thought. That totally makes sense.
So we're gonna continue that conversation here and give it to me, guys. Why do you think this is a shitty idea?
Well, before we jump into whether or not it's a good idea, because I think that's gonna be an interesting conversation. But let's start with like the logistics of how this would even be possible. Because we talked a little bit about, okay, so they're going to have a download code, and by that, I mean probably like a CD key that would come with each game. But there's an important key there, and that's that every console has to be online enabled. And
right.
I think I read a survey or not a survey, a news article that said only about 75% of Xboxes and PS3s were connected to the internet. So, like, if Microsoft decides that they're going to have some sort of a copy protection scheme, or a used game protection scheme, I should say, that blocks out all but the authenticated copies, they've just cut themselves off a quarter of their market.
This is true.
Like, that's insane. That's a lot of people to say, oh, well, if you can't figure out how to get your console online, you can't use it.
Right.
But don't you think that the number of people connecting it to the internet is only going to go up over time?
Yeah, probably, but...
But still, you don't want to limit your user base.
It's not launching. It's not launching in 6 years. It's launching in 2 years. Like maybe that number goes up to 80-85% in 2 years. You're still talking about lopping off 15-20% of your user base that doesn't want to go online with their console.
I don't know how big of like PC gamers you guys are, but I play a lot of PC games, and I mean
I played Croc, Legend of the Gobos.
So you're pretty with it, Zach. You're pretty. Oh yeah,
I'm right on the cutting edge.
But this has been kind of, I don't want to call it an epidemic, but it's been a big issue for God, I don't know, 7 or 8 years now, where companies are trying to figure out how to prevent piracy. And one of the big things is DRM, and one method used specifically by EA quite a bit is forcing you to be connected to the internet, like to validate that your game's authentic before you can play, and then needing you to be online the entirety of the time you're playing. So, and I mean, computers are much more likely to be connected to the internet than Xboxes, and even that was such a big deal, and people were very upset about it, and they're always... these instances where, well, maybe I'm not online, like maybe my internet's down, or maybe I'm playing on my laptop and I'm not, I'm not on Wi-Fi.
Well, that was a big to-do with some PSN games, like Bionic Commando Rearm 2 and the HD version of, Fatal Fury 3 or something?
Mm-hmm.
They require you to be on the internet when you play them.
Well, and wasn't there some deal with, like, I want to say Spore specifically, but I think there was other games as well where they only had a limit of, like, 3 activations?
Yeah, you could only install it. You could only install it 3 times.
You couldn't reclaim those. It's not like you could say, oh, I'm going to go format my computer and reinstall Windows. Let me reclaim this authentication and then redo it once I'm done.
What they did offer, and I could be wrong because it's been years now, but supposedly if you used all 3 but you needed more, you could contact customer support and explain the situation, and then they would give you more codes, like more activations, which just seems so shitty and such like a huge ordeal to just install your game on another computer. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, this isn't completely unheard of, this idea of trying to prevent, used game sales. I mean, right now, if you buy an EA game that has any online functionality, there's a code you have to enter to get online, and once you enter that code, that's it.
And not even that, but look at like Batman Arkham City. They've locked a good couple hours of the single player campaign in the form of Catwoman behind a code.
And that's stupid.
I mean, like, how insidious to say like that's DLC, the Catwoman stuff, when it's intricate and like intertwined into the story proper. I feel bad for people who bought the game new but didn't bother to enter the code because they thought they didn't need it till afterwards.
I actually bought the game at a Blockbuster store closing clearance sale, and it came with a copy of the actually came with 2 copies of the code. And neither one of them worked because the game, prompts you when you play it to put the code in.
Did you buy the code then?
Yeah, I had $5 in credit sitting left over from Christmas, and I just threw $5 more on there, and I bought it. I haven't even played it yet because I'm still trying to fight through Uncharted 3.
Yeah.
But I did pay for the Catwoman DLC.
I'm not entirely opposed to EA's plan there with charging you basically to, if you buy the game used, to be able to get online with it again,
Oh yeah.
Or charging you for this, basically cleverly finding a way to lock away part of the campaign. I mean, I'm okay with that, I think. I mean, because the developers get at least something out of it. But to bring it back to the genesis of this conversation, a system that is entirely locking out used games, as much as I don't like GameStop and I don't like their philosophy, it just seems like it penalizes their user base more than GameStop.
Well,
let's think about this. Let's say that the Xbox 720 locks out used game sales. That means you either have to buy your game new for God knows how much next generation games are going to cost.
$6,000.
$6,000. and that's on sale. Or, let's be real, you can buy them through XBLA.
And see, that's the route I thought it was going to go. I thought they were going to just make pretty much everything available in online to for download. And
that's
that would
what the Vita's doing.
Right, and that would be their big push, and that's how they would get more sales away from GameStop.
Okay, but there's some problems with that, though. Like, I have several Apple devices. I used to have an iPhone. Now I've got an iPod Touch and an iPad. You know what those devices do that no current console really does? As far as I can tell, I don't have a PSP, so I haven't really messed too much with PSN. But, like, it's super easy for me to fire up a new Apple device. Like, just go to the store right now and buy a new iPod Touch, bring all of my apps over. I can delete, download, reinstall, and I don't know if there's a maximum number of devices I can have my apps on, but I do know that it doesn't give me any hassle when right. I want to download, right. re-download it. I don't have to worry about, you know, whether or not my profile is tied to the hardware. I don't have to like reassign my primary device to my profile, to my user account. No, it just works.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't mind giving Apple. And that's why I don't mind giving Apple a shit ton of money for software. I mean, granted, the other part of that is that I'm never paying more than $5 for any particular piece of software unless right. I've had a lot of time to think about it and it's something that I really, really need for, like, work or whatever. But, like, I don't spend more than $5 at a time for anything on Apple. And on top of that, their you know, DRM is incredibly generous compared to every other hardware platform there is right now. Like, right. I have two Xboxes in my house, but, like, trying to get content transferred between them is kind of a hassle because it really wants to be tied to one Xbox.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's stupid. Until the fall dashboard update, I had to bring my profile back and forth upstairs on a thumb drive.
Yeah, that was the worst. Yeah, how it wouldn't let you have two active profiles on, like, two separate systems.
Well, and they could change that. They could improve that. They could learn from the mistakes of this last generation, and improve it.
They certainly could, but and what I'm saying is they're going to have to if they're going to try to pull this kind of used game bullshit.
Well, to me too, just one more point, and then Zach, I want to hear you kind of defend your position a little bit, but to me, I mean, this even just hurts you, like, letting a friend borrow a game, you know? I mean, how does that work? I mean, you just can't do that anymore? I mean, a friend, you could tell them about the game and then they have to go buy it? You can't just let them borrow it for a week? I mean,
maybe you can transfer authentication.
And yeah, what about game rentals? Like, how's GameFly going to work?
GameFly is not going to work for the Xbox 720.
You heard it here first.
Well, hold on. That's not entirely true. I mean, what if GameStop gave you a like 2-week authentication code or something? I mean,
you mean GameFly?
Yeah, yeah, GameFly. Like, they could give you a code with the game that they've authorized a deal with from, you know, EA or Microsoft or whatever. It could work, but it would require a lot more communication and cooperation between entities that aren't known for doing that.
Right.
Sure.
But
it would be a massive effort.
Yes. But so, Zach, why are you in favor of this, like, so strongly?
I have written many a screed about GameStop, and they're never getting any better. And I think that in the short term, if this screws over gamers a little bit, it will be really fun and fulfilling to watch GameStop crumble and die as their major source of revenue goes away. And then when they do declare bankruptcy, these limitations can be eased.
Yeah, this is so great. To me, this reminds me of, like, the video game version of, like, the Patriot Act, where you're like, well, basically, we gotta give up some of our freedoms if we're gonna stop those terrorists. And once they're gone, we'll stop tapping your phones. Like, we're not gonna monitor what you're doing online.
It is the greater good, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Zach, without GameStop, how could you possibly pre-order Halo 4?
Well, I wouldn't be pre-ordering.
You're not
Halo
going to be
4.
Able to do it. You're screwed. Just admit it. You're totally screwed.
You'll never find it.
It's not like I can go to Best Buy anymore and take one of those little pre-order cards to the front and get DLC for it.
Or on the day the game comes out, just buy one of the, like, 800 copies that they'll have.
What?
But what? But what if you wanted to spend $5 on nothing in particular months before the game comes out? Then what are you going to do?
I think I'll get
it. I know, man. See, that's the thing. That's the thing to me. I see why there's a used game market. I myself have bought used games. But I don't really buy that many used games for current generation consoles, believe it or not. I don't buy that many games, period, but when I do buy games, I tend to buy them on the day they come out. Yeah. You know, I bought Dead Space 2 when it came out. I bought Soul Calibur 5 when it came out. I bought, I don't know, what else have I bought? You know, things that, if I really want it, I'm going to buy it on day one. I'm not going to wait for it to come out. Or if I sort of want it, but I can wait, I'll wait 3 months and the price will drop $20.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways you can get a game cheaper than, I mean, Amazon. Go to Amazon. You can get the game $5 off day one. So to my mind, GameStop is doing more bad than good to the industry at large.
Go ahead.
And I see no reason for them to exist. I mean, I see a reason for them to exist, but they don't have to exist. I don't think we as gamers would be taking such a hit and if they were to go away. And, you know, in the meantime, download the game on XBLA. It'll probably be cheaper than, I mean, that would be the dream. If the digital copy was cheaper than the physical copy, and that's what they're doing on PS Vita.
Yeah, it's such a ballsy move, though. I mean, I don't know.
One thing we haven't really talked about, though, and this is the piece of the puzzle that's sort of the most important to me, is the ability to sell your games. Not just to GameStop, but I sell games on eBay fairly often because I live in a world right now where I live in a reality, I should say, right now where if I don't sell games back, I don't get to play new games.
Right.
Like, I basically have to clear out my collection every time something new comes out that I really, really want. Like, I sold, like, 3 or 4 of my favorite, like, Wii and DS games when the 3DS came out because I wanted to get one at launch. And I'm kind of regretting it now, but I also understand that these things are not generally rare commodities. If I want to go buy a new copy of DKCR, I can go do that. Like, it's not that hard to find. I just got to figure out when I feel like spending $40-$50 on it, depending on how much I find it for. But
right.
That's the thing is, getting on XBLA sounds great, and I love the idea of not having to get up off my lazy ass and put a disc in. But at the same time, man, it's hard for me to justify spending $30 in a game when I don't have that safety net of turning around and selling it for $25 after I beat it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, that your argument, Zach, is great for GameStop, because I agree at their practices in terms of what it does to the actual developers of games. I mean, basically stealing money from them is awful, but that's not the entirety of the used game market. It's a huge share of it. But yeah, what about just selling games, I mean, person to person? I mean, like Andy here, just selling stuff on eBay. I mean, you completely cut that out. So it's like you buy a game and you beat it and you're just stuck with it because now it's worthless. You can't do anything with it. And I've heard the argument that you have to kind of change your perspective, and when you buy games now, that you're not so much buying the game, you're basically purchasing like a license to play the game.
Buying the ability to play the game.
Exactly. And so you have to kind of change your perspective, but that just seems, I don't know, that just seems crazy. And it's unlike any other medium right now. I mean, I guess.
I agree. No, movies are kind of similar.
Sort of, but you could still go buy DVDs and then sell them.
No, that's true. Can we agree that this is, you know, unfortunate or not, probably where the industry's headed?
Well, I think the industry's headed more towards digital downloads in general. I think we're sort of in an awkward in-between stage. We're sort of now being asked to deal with the restrictions of digital download without the convenience of it. One of the things I would kind of like to see if they actually go forward with this is, hey, maybe let me install my game to the hard drive and don't ask me to put a disc in every time. Because the authentication isn't on the disc anymore. It's on, you know, my profile. So if that's the, you know, if that's the kind of thing they're going to let me do, then I might be more receptive to being required to buy new copies. On top of that, I think if they're going to demolish the used game market on Xbox, they have to lower the price of new games. Or at least make some sort of like requirement that game prices come down after a while, because I tell you what, the amount of games I buy at $60 is incredibly low. If they want me to buy every piece of like full-blown retail content at $60, then I'm going to buy three games the entire generation, because it's just not going to happen. And, and two of them are going to be NCAA football.
Guaranteed.
But yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, Zach. I think this is sort of inevitable, you know, the move to a digital format, but it still, in the, for the time being, doesn't justify, you know, completely cutting off that market, not to mention that user base who thrives in that market, like Andy, who can't afford to buy $60 games every week, you know, like most people who probably can't, which is why GameStop is so successful. I really think they need to just talk to GameStop and say, like, if you're going to thrive off of our business, then you're going to work with us, because if not, then we'll just stop going to you. I mean, people can go other places to buy games. I mean, and for every GameStop, probably in the same shopping center, there's a Target and a Best Buy and a Walmart.
Exactly.
Or Amazon.
why don't we turn this topic a little bit more towards our forte, and just what kind of solution could you see Nintendo coming up with to deal with the used game problem? Because I certainly don't see Nintendo ever trying to put together a system where you have to be online to authenticate a new copy of the game, because that doesn't jive at all with the direction they've gone for the last 10 years.
Let's preface this, Andy, by saying they are apparently now in bed with GameStop.
Well, they certainly have done quite a few exclusive deals with GameStop, that's for certain.
Mm-hmm. And I've sort of, you know, hypothesized that, or maybe not, that might not be the right word, but kind of thought that maybe GameStop will sort of run Nintendo's, the Wii U's online, you know, at least shop infrastructure in some way. They might have their hand in it.
Well, I know GameStop is developing sort of a competitor to OnLive.
Yep.
I mean, what if you didn't have to buy the new Mario game? What if you could just pay to stream it?
Hey, now, that I like.
Depending on the pricing model, I mean, it probably wouldn't be a subscription like we'd all want. It'd be you spend maybe 40, not 60, to play it for, you know, 3 months or something like that. But, you know, they're developing that technology, and with the Wii would certainly have the horsepower to take advantage of it. I mean, with a thin client, you don't need that much. But once again, you'd have to have a really solid broadband connection at your home, and Nintendo has not generally put out products that require that. So, I don't know.
That's true. You know, I think E3 is just going to be really interesting, because we are probably going to hear about the next box, and we're going to get a better taste of what Nintendo's online strategy is going to be. So, you know, I don't think that this Xbox locking out used games is going to happen, but it is an interesting concept, and I can see someday, you know, in the shiny digital future, something like this happening, you know, in the far-flung future, in the next console cycle after this next one.
Right. I agree. I don't think it's here yet.
I don't either. I mean, I long for the day where whenever I move, I don't have to fill two boxes with games.
I don't know. I'm a sucker. I mean, because I still have my Super Nintendo and NES and Sega Genesis. I'm kind of a sucker for those things. At least the old stuff. I guess I don't really care about, like, the jewel cases holding my Wii games now or something. Yeah. You know, like, that doesn't matter to me. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm ready to pretty much go all digital. I mean, PC games, I just buy all through Steam now. I don't go out and buy the actual copies, so.
Yeah.
Well, I've kind of gone through this in stages as well, because, I don't know, something like 2005 or so, I kind of changed my mindset on music, and I thought, I want to go record shopping. I'm going to buy CDs every week, and I'm going to buy vinyl records, and you know, I did that for like 3 or 4 years. I spent a lot of money on physical copies of music from like 05 to like 07. And then suddenly it dawned on me that I would buy a CD, I would put it in my computer, I would rip it to my iPod, I would put it on the shelf,
and I would never touch it again.
And finally, like, after a couple of years, maybe like in 2008, 2009, I realized that I hadn't bought a CD in a long time. Now I buy all my music digital, but I also have a lot of control over what I do with that music. I'm buying it. I'm not buying it from the 2005 circa iTunes store where I can have it on three computers or whatever. I'm buying it from Amazon MP3 where it's literally nothing more than an MP3 file. And then I'm kind of going through the same thing with my movies. You know, up until about 2 years ago, I spent a lot of money on DVDs. I have a giant shelf of DVDs that I never watch. And
I
then this Christmas I got an Apple TV, so I bought a 2 terabyte hard drive, and I've been ripping them all. And I've got like 100 gigabytes now, or no, about a full terabyte, I'm sorry, of ripped DVDs. And I'm starting to watch movies and TV shows that I forgot that I even had. Like, I've been rewatching the first season of Scrubs. That's great.
I love that show.
That show really still holds up.
Eagle!
It's kind of fun to go through all these movies that I haven't seen in so long. I don't even have the time to watch them all because I'm starting to realize how many goddamn movies I have, and it's absurd. Yeah. But, like, at this point, you know, my wife and I built this really nice, like, wall-sized DVD rack about 2 years ago, and now I kind of want to put all my DVDs in a box and trash the shelf because I don't need them anymore. They're available on a menu on my Apple TV, and that's good enough for me. And I'm not quite ready to go there with games yet, but my biggest hang-up is that resale value. I just sold 3 games on eBay today. Granted, they didn't sell for much, but they'll buy me something. I can probably pay for most of a 3DS game with them. So
yeah.
But Andy, you can't rent. You can't buy used. Well, no, that's not true.
What?
You can't buy used digital copies of movies and music.
No, but I can have a Blockbuster store closing sale and pick up 5 movies at $10, which I did yesterday. That's my other reason. I haven't jumped on the whole Blu-ray bandwagon because it's a lot harder to rip Blu-rays, as I understand it, and they take up a hell of a lot more hard drive space. So I'm still buying DVDs because they're super cheap right now.
I stopped buying DVDs a long time ago, and just because they're expensive.
Well,
and
everything's on Netflix too. I mean, it's hard to justify paying for a TV show when you can just go on Netflix and watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we don't have streaming anymore, but I only buy Blu-rays, and I only buy them when they're on sale at Target.
Yep.
Yeah, and most of that, honestly, I'm replacing my DVDs.
Speaking of retail outlets that are not fair to the customer, speaking of Blockbuster, I mentioned
$4 for a one-night rental, folks.
The Blockbuster that is by my house is closing, like most Blockbusters do. And they had – I don't know if you saw this picture of mine on Facebook, Zach. They had a copy of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and it was like a Blu-ray DVD combo pack with like a digital download. Yeah. But it was like this really plain packaging. It was just a black case with a black label and like silvery white, like not even really a font. It was just sort of the plain text. And they were selling it for
$124.99. What?
And I looked at it and I'm like, well, that's odd.
This has to be a typo.
Well, you'd think, right? So my wife like looked it up on Google, and she found out that it's actually supposed to come with a giant metal Terminator skull. But they didn't have the skull, but they didn't even know that. So they just marked it up for $125 and put it on the shelf. I brought it up to an employee who didn't really care because the store was closing, and he was like, wow, that's bad. We should probably not sell that. And I was like, yeah. So we put it behind the counter. I went back to that Blockbuster a week and a half later, and they not only had they put it back out, but below the $124.99 price tag, they wrote 30% off, $84.99.
Nice.
Handwritten. I was like, oh my god, how could you have taken the time to write this out by hand and still not thought to question why you're selling a copy of Terminator 2 on Blu-ray for like $90?
Right.
Are you out of your damn funny. Mind? This is why your store is closing. Seriously.
We still have Blockbusters up here, and I think they're doing okay.
We had like 6 in Des Moines, and all of them but 2 closed, and now I think one of those 2 is closing. But like I mentioned, I think to Mike on Twitter, maybe like 3 or 4 months ago, he was like, I want to go get this DVD, but I can't find it in stores. I was like, just go to Blockbuster and rent it. And he was like, dude, we haven't had a Blockbuster in years.
Are your Blockbusters little mini malls with Supercuts and Papa Murphy's?
Yeah, basically.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
They must all be owned by the same people.
I think there's a Papa Murphy's right next door to the one. I'm not sure about Supercuts, though.
Yeah, we had a bunch of Blockbusters and Papa Murphy's, and they both all closed down at the same time.
All right, guys. So that's used games plus me ranting about Blockbuster, and that's about it. If you have any comments about this whole used game thing, if you have any ideas for how Nintendo might implement some sort of an anti-used game technology, I don't quite see it, but I'd be kind of curious to see what people might think they would do. Shoot us an email at connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, well, right. Gentlemen, thank you for sticking around with me.
No problem.
Andy, thanks for handing off your screaming infant to your wife for half hour.
I'm going to try to do this a little more often. As my darling little child gets a little bit older, she gets a little bit calmer day by day.
Go.
But it's still
good,
tough for me to hand her to the wife for 2 hours and say, okay, you deal with her. I'm going to go downstairs. But I think it's getting better, and so I'll hopefully be able to be on the show a little bit more often going forward. I like being on the show. I miss it.
So that's why
that's why I keep sending listener mail in.
All right, gents. I'm going to go eat dinner.
All right.
Farewell, y'all. I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.